the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
And welcome to a special 2015 NHL Draft edition of Junior. Jeff Merrick alongside Sam Cosentino at the BB&T, which always sounds like a drink to me, Sam. I'm not sure how you feel about the name of this rink here in Sunrise, Florida. So the first round has come and gone. Rounds 2 through 7 go tomorrow starting at 10 o'clock Eastern. And Sam, some wide brush thoughts to kick off what I've been describing as a very unpredictable draft, even though the first two picks were the most predictable that we've seen in I don't know how many years.
It's funny because it looked like the number three pick was actually the number one pick, right? Because everyone knew it was a foregone conclusion that you'd have McDavid and that you'd have Eichel. And so it just took a while for that to get going. And then all of a sudden, things start to shake down, I think, through the first 10, 12 picks exactly the way many people thought they would. A little bit of variances here and there. Hanifin was a really good pick for Carolina at number 5. Provorov, I thought, went a little late. I spoke so highly of him, and Jeff, you know how I feel about him. And then pretty neat to see Boston with 3 consecutive picks. That was a really neat thing. And you have to love what Don Sweeney did the entire day. I mean, really, he just remade his franchise. You hear all the things about the salary cap, Boston,
yeah.
Shirelli. Maybe that's why he was
it's
a reset button.
But the thing is, he didn't have the best start to his day. I mean, overwhelmingly, the consensus is that Calgary robbed the bank and didn't have to wear a mask. That, Don Sweeney may have had, a nice little, between Zboril and DeBrusk and Sinishin, and that was a surprise pick that I think caught everybody. They didn't start great for the Boston Bruins.
I think there were other factors at play there when it came to Dougie Hamilton. Whether they knew they were going to sign him, maybe there was some inner turmoil there. I think there were some other factors at play. And so Don Sweeney was put into motion right away to say, hey, if it's not going to work out here, let's try and monetize this as best we can. You don't know how many of those things were out there. But really, at the end of the day, it's kind of like an organization that's as ancient as time, hitting the reset button. Still 3 picks in the second round, 3 consecutive picks in the first round. If you're a general manager in your first year running the draft, you can really put your fingerprint on things right away.
General manager for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
He's barely, he's relatively new to the job. So an interesting first round. A couple of things I think caught a few people by surprise. To your point about Provorov, I think the Flyers we're thrilled to find him at 7. And, would you have gone through the dialogue that would run something like this? Well, we have Shane Goss to spare.
Yeah.
Well, we have Samuel Morin.
Yeah.
Well, we have Travis Sanheim. As much as Ivan Provorov is the best player available at that spot, do you not at least have the conversation that, do we really need Ivan Provorov there?
Surely that must have been the internal conversation. But when you look at where Provorov is, I'm not so sure he's leapfrog those other two. I'm not sure about Gottschalk, but talking about Morin and Sanheim, I think he's leapfrogged those two. I think he could play in the National Hockey League next year. I've been very vocal about that. I think by the time January of next year rolls around, he maybe puts himself into a top 4 position on any blue line that he's going to be on. But this draft really speaks to having to take the best player available. All teams want to address needs, and there's lots of time still to do that. But when you look at the depth of this draft, think about some of the guys that were left out of the first round, Jeff. That speaks to the depth in and of itself. And the situation arose for Provorov, where he gets all the way to Philadelphia, and surely they thought they were probably going to get a power forward there, and either Zacha was selected right ahead of him, maybe Rantanen, and they said, Provorov's still here. We got to take him.
It's a wonderful time to be a Philadelphia Flyers fan, and you wonder too if grabbing Provorov, if you're Ron Hextall, you say to yourself, well, this really fell into our laps, this is really nice. There are some scenarios we saw this would happen, but it was unlikely. Provorov falls to the Philadelphia Flyers. Does that make it easier to take someone who may have been a questionable first rounder in Travis Konechny?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
like, if you only have one pick, I don't know if you pick Travis Kelce, but if you have two, probably
yeah,
you do.
Yeah, definitely. That's why multiple picks were so huge. And, you know, we went on Sportsnet Central yesterday, and I thought there would be a ton of activity because these picks, they're not going to have greater value than what they'll have in this draft. I mean, everyone talks about 03, 1979. You know, you're a big historian of the game. You'd have to say that this is the best. This is
closer to 206 or 208.
Yeah?
To me, it's closer. I mean, 203 was the freak. Everybody got a player. And, you know, in 79 sort of set up the 80s, all the heavyweight teams. But this one almost seemed closer to, you know, the Stamkos-Doughty draft more than anything else. Even though two players on top, I mean, we should probably start there. Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel. And boy, did Buffalo get busy today as well with the Ryan O'Reilly deal. Tim Murray was a busy guy, and he's going to continue to be busy. And for the second year in a row, stole the show by just walking up there and announcing the player's name, which is fantastic. But Connor McDavid goes to the Edmonton Oilers, no surprise. And the nice thing about this from the Oilers' point of view is you don't get McDavid at the beginning of a rebuild.
Yeah.
This is McDavid who comes in with some established players. Young players, mind you, but some established guys are there.
Yeah, and, you know, they're going to have to address the goaltending situation. But they pick up a defenseman in Griffin Reinhardt who's going to be able to step in and play right away. Darnell Nurse is going to arrive on the scene. When you look at two of your probably top six defensemen now for Edmonton, you start to talk about that depth and, you know, really making a team of it. But they're going to have to address the goaltender situation. How would you like to have Connor McDavid, though? I mean, when he gets to play with better players, he's just going to be ridiculously good. And that's not to say he's going to be a 90-point guy next year.
Yeah.
But, Jeff, two or three years in the league, forget it. He's going to be lights out.
Yeah, I know. And this is no disrespect to players that he plays with on the Erie Otters, but there's a difference between playing with Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle versus Nick Baptiste and Alex DeBrincat.
You know, you look at a National Hockey League player and the range of getting a pass, maybe 6 to 8 feet, you know, with the reach and the stride and so on and so forth. And then you look at the ability to kick it off the skate, get it up to the stick, you know, picking off passes that might be shin high or ankle high. Yep. All of these things are done on a regular basis in the National Hockey League. They're not done in junior. And when you think about a guy like Connor McDavid, he's able to slow the play down. He's able to slow the game down, look around, what's my best option? Well, he's now going to be able to do that at a higher pace. I mean, it's scary to think what he's going to do.
Well, how many times, Sam, were we there on the CHL on Sportsnet Sunday afternoons or Friday Night Hockey, and we'd have an Erie Otters game on, and we'd say to ourselves, you know what, Connor McDavid could have made another play, but the player, whether it's, you know, whomever, DeBrincat, Baptiste, Nick Betts, wouldn't be able to think at that level, so Connor wouldn't do it. You wonder now, you know, what are the things that he wasn't allowing himself to do in junior that he can now do at the NHL level?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. You know, takes and whatever. And the other, you know, the other part of that, we always talk about his vision and his creativity. But his stick skills are such that those players that are going to give the puck to him now, where he's going to have the opportunity to take it to the net and finish and maybe be a little more selfish, yeah, he's going to be so much fun to watch. I can't wait. If I were living in Edmonton, I'd go buy season tickets.
And he is going to be one of those players, and you can count them on one hand, that will do just that. How many guys individually can sell tickets? Well, one of them just joined the NHL, or should we say two?
Eichel? I think Eichel will.
I think Eichel will sell tickets initially as well. We'll see what happens with Eichel with the Buffalo Sabres. In any other draft year, this guy's going number one, going away. Different player than McDavid.
What a consolation.
Oh, wow, we lost the lottery, the booby prize is Jack Eichel, who would be number one in any other year. What do you make of Jack Eichel going to Buffalo? We've been talking about it long enough, and the day is finally here.
Buffalo is really fascinating now because I think they rid themselves of a couple of players. Like Grigorenko has just not had a good run there. He gets reunited with Patrick Waugh. That'll probably work out for him. Zadorov's a guy that really, you know, a little big for his britches, I think, became a guy that players had trouble dealing with because of his arrogance. Maybe he was given a little bit too much too soon. He likes the flash and dash. You know, he's got the Louis Vuitton going on and the Gucci and this and that. And I think the Buffalo Sabres started to get sick of that as a group, and I don't think they wanted that as part of their culture. Maybe the same thing going with Grigorenko, going to Patrick Waugh, maybe he has the ability to deal with those guys, because if he's able to draw the most out of those two players, they're going to be really excited, because Zadorov has out-of-this-world potential. I always liked Grigorenko, He just never seemed to quite figure it out, the work ethic. But I did see him at the Cup. He looked like he was in shape. He was spending the summer in Quebec. So he'll be around Patrick Roy, and they'll start to rebuild that relationship. I think there's good things to come from him. But getting back to Buffalo, Jeff, I mean, Eichel and O'Reilly down the middle for you, if that's what you want to do as your top two guys.
Hang on.
Oh, Sam Reinhardt, I forgot about
him. Oh, and how about that Zemgus Girgensons kid as well?
He's not bad either.
Like, all of a sudden, if you win hockey games down the middle, all of a sudden, the Buffalo Sabres now, and we'll see how long it takes, you know, Eichel to hit that top level, and ditto for Reinhardt as well. Thing is looking great down the middle for the future for the Sabres.
Isn't it really weird for the Sabres? Because I think everyone thought going into this draft, oh, yeah, this is the start of the rebuild. You know, here's where we're going to see it take a couple of years and whatever else. That's not the case now. Like, I look at Buffalo, and you'd have to put them in the mix as a contending team for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference now.
Really, eh?
I think so.
The East is more wide open than
well,
the West.
Leonard's going to be a big part of it. I mean, if he plays to his potential and what we've seen in great games from him, and obviously Tim Murray and Greg Royce, they've got great intelligence on him. They were the ones who were a big part of drafting him in Ottawa. So it obviously starts there. I mean, if he's kind of have a wavering year like he did last year and he can't get through the concussion issues, then, you know, that's going to be problematic. But man, they got some pretty good guys in the back. Ristolainen's a really nice young player. I mean, Reinhardt, I think, has way more to give than anyone in Buffalo is going to expect. Eichel's going to come in and play right away. Gergensen's, let's vote him for an all-star right now. Why not? I mean, I think Buffalo, you know, you get Kane, you got O'Reilly now. All of a sudden, they're not pushovers. You're not going to play Buffalo and say this is an easy 2 points. It's not going to be that way anymore.
That's true. Number three, Dylan Strome goes to the Arizona Coyotes. Now, there was some talk this week around the hotel from various people you spoke to that there was a feeling that maybe Arizona would take Mitch Marner and do their own version of the triplets line and reunite that that London line that lit the OHL on fire, Dvorak, Domi, and Marner, but not to be the case. Dylan Strome goes third. The right pick?
They wanted the size up the middle, and I think when you look at their system, Henrik Samuelsson, Dylan Strome are going to be the centers up the middle in the future for the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, then they go and take Merkley 30th. So fascinating to me in that when I'm looking at Arizona and Perlini, Dvorak, Michael Bunting, all of these great forwards, Lucas Lesio, now all of a sudden they're adding two more forwards to the group. Yeah. Merkley, I think, is a dead steal at 30. But getting Dylan Strome gives you that size up the middle. At some point, they're going to have to move some of those guys to get some defensemen in there and maybe stagger things a little bit from when all that forward group arrives. But Arizona, man, oh, man, you're in Glendale, and you know you don't want them there anymore. I don't know if they end up in Quebec or wherever that thing ends up landing. But whoever ends up with the Arizona Coyotes team in 3 years, they're going to be really excited about what they're going to see in the
have some nice players. Mitch Marner goes to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised. Whether it's the Hofford Hill Academy Association, whether it's the Hunter London Knights Association, it's now the Mitch Marner Toronto Maple Leafs Association.
Did you think that's where they were going?
The Maple Leafs?
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And that's because at the end of all of it, Mark Hunter's job was to run the draft. And no matter what Mike Babcock or other people in the organization wanted, and we suspect it was a defenseman, if you're Mark Hunter, you're saying to Brendan Shanahan, that's what you brought me in for.
You know what was pretty fascinating to me? Just kind of watching the dynamic. And we'd heard so much about the infighting with the Toronto Maple Leafs or arguing or whatever it is. Infighting's probably too strong a word. A little dramatic. We like to do that sometimes with the Toronto Maple Leafs. But when you look at the grand scheme of things, you saw Kyle Dubas going up and making the trades, which is kind of what his thing was coming into this thing. And you saw Mark Hunter go and make the picks. I was fascinated how they were able to make that work. But seemingly it's worked out. Is there going to be a general manager in the future? Does the title get added to someone's name? I'm not really sure. But Toronto and Mark Hunter doing their things. Mike Babcock, the one thing he did say, though, is give Mark Hunter picks. And he gave him picks. And he picked up, you know, what are they at, 34, 61, and 68 now, with continuing to move down out of the first round from 24 backwards.
So from Mitch Marner, we go to Noah Hanifin at number five to the Carolina Hurricanes. Safe to say we should say he fell to the Carolina Hurricanes at five.
So. Yeah, I really think so. I mean, as I said before, I think Provorov's the best defenseman in this draft. Hanifin's just going to play for you. He's a mature young man, fast-tracked through school so he could get into Boston College a little early. There is absolutely nothing not to like about this guy. He's going to be a fantastic player. a really mature guy. And again, you know, when I talk about Provorov, it doesn't it's apples to apples, really. That's what it comes down to. So you like the size with Hanifin, you like the maturity, but you like some of the other elements, maybe the offensive side that Provorov brings. But really good pick there for Carolina. That was the David Poyle sprint when Seth Jones was available at the four spot in 2013.
Yeah, I couldn't get up on stage fast enough to say the name just to make sure that it registered. Pavel Zacha goes to the New Jersey Devils. There was some talk this week that Matthew Barzal was the player that New Jersey wanted, but not so fast. New Jersey does have a history, as we all know, with Czech-born hockey players. They're loaded on the back end as well. Maybe that's why they took a pass on Provorov. They have a lot of good young defensemen. We've documented them before on this program. What do you make of Pavel Zacha going to New Jersey, and is he a centerman or is he a winger?
That's the million-dollar question. I think he can play center. You know, a big guy. He's got a lot of drive to his game. He does at times play over the edge. I talked to Trevor Letowski earlier today. and he said, you know, we had to have some really good long one-to-one, heart-to-heart conversations about knowing when to control your emotions, knowing when to take that step back, knowing, you know, especially in the Ontario Hockey League, where suspensions come fast and furiously, and they lengthen as you get more.
Double digits right out of the hop.
So they had a good conversation about that, he and Trevor at the time. I think he smartened up his game. I think the injuries played a part of it. But, you know, down the stretch against McDavid in the playoffs was really good. Under 18s, he was really good. So that pick, I think, was fitting for where it was.
Okay, so from there we go to Sam's favorite defense in the draft, and that's Ivan Provorov to the Philadelphia Flyers. Home run.
Home run.
You're seven and you get Provorov.
Yeah, that'd be another sprint to the podium for me, no question about it. He has no holes in his game. He's a pro. He could play. He can play right now. I know Kelly McCrimmon doesn't want to hear that. I'm sorry, Kelly, but that's just a fact.
Well, how about this? Is this a fact? Zach Werenski of the University of Michigan gets drafted eighth by the Columbus Blue Jackets, which means he's going to play for the London Knights.
Yeah, how about that? How about that? I mean, as if they don't have enough guys. They're going to look like the U.S. Knights with all the guys.
I know. Kachuk and Jones and keep going right down the list. It's USA Hockey in London.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? You fast track again to finish your final year of high school last summer. You end up at University of Michigan, have a really good year there. But, I mean, if he signs, he signs. What more can you do if they're University of Michigan? The NCAA rules don't allow for him to play that after he signs his contract, then you'd have to expect at some point he's going to sign here.
Last year, Columbus drafted Sonny Milano. He ended up decommitting and going to Plymouth. We'll see what happens with Zach Werenski. His rights, as we mentioned, held by the London Knights, of the OHL. Timo Meier, a little bit higher than you thought, the big, thick power forward. Big Swiss power forward, he goes to the San Jose Sharks at 9.
Just by a touch. NHL shot, NHL release, thick-bodied guy. He's got the skating figured out now. Most improved player in the Halifax Mooseheads this year. Really good at the BMO top prospects.
The great line, too, with Konechny, who was the star of the show. Yeah. And the who's the other guy on that line again?
Oh, Connor something.
Right, we're number 97. His name escapes me.
Do you think he was a little high there?
Timo Meier?
Yeah.
I had him in the low teens.
Yeah, okay.
That's kind of where I had Timo Meier. But you know what? There's a whole – it's funny because, you know, you look at – there's a stretch of, you know, and we're going to get to this in a second, a stretch of power forwards that went. You know, after a pair of defensemen, then it seems as if, okay, now we're loading up on power forwards. Timo Meier goes. Mikko Rantanen goes, big 6'3", 215-pound stud of a player. And then Lawson Crouse goes to the Florida Panthers. So perhaps you said those players were going to be bunched together anyhow. I was just a little bit shocked that Timo Meier went that high to San Jose, but they love them some Swiss hockey player, and he's a really good one, 100%. Mikko Rantanen goes to Colorado. We talked to Patrick Roy at the Memorial Cup, and he went on at length about how we're going to draft a defenseman, we're going to get a defenseman, it's going to happen, we're going to get a defenseman. They didn't take a defenseman, but to your point earlier, Sam, they did with Nikita Zadorov. That opens up the door for them to grab Mikko Rantanen from Finland.
When you look at the tiers of defensemen in this draft, it ends at Werenski. So you've got Hanifin, Provorov, Werenski, and then you go to the next tier. But unfortunately, Colorado is picking too high to take a defenseman from that next tier.
Yep.
So they go with the best player there in Rantanen, played with men, wore a letter. A lot to like about Mikko Rantanen's game.
Lawson Crouse falls all the way down to 11. Here's a guy that was in the conversation for top five.
Oh, yeah.
At one point this year.
It's the same old story. People are going to say, oh, he's not going to be able to score this, that, the other thing. The thing about Lawson Crouse is if he can't score, it doesn't matter. He's still going to impact the game. He's going to block shots. He'll be good in the penalty kill. He'll play a physical game. He'll be out there policing. Yep. He's got the game face already. I mean, he had quite the snarl going on at the combine.
Oh, yeah.
And he just kind of looked miserable the whole time, you know? But that's the type of guy you want. I mean, he is loaded with personality, with that drive, with that will to win. His self-awareness to me is amazing, Jeff. He knows exactly where he's going to slot into a lineup, and he plays to his strengths to assert himself into that lineup.
That's the thing. And I talked to Paul McFarland at the airport on the way in as we were talking about Lawson Crouse, and he said, you know, a guy like Lawson Crouse specifically, a lot of big guys, when they're out there, can give off the impression that they're coasting just because they're big and it might take a long time to get the engine going. But he said the thing that he likes about Lawson Crouse is he wants to do something every single shift, whether it's a block shot, to your point, whether it's a big hit, whether it's a scoring opportunity. He wants to do something every single shift, and that's rare for a big guy. Big guys take shifts off.
Yeah, it is rare for a big guy, but it's also rare for a big guy to have the skill set to be able to do all of those things, because typically you're talking about that power forward who's just in there on the forecheck banging and crashing, or you talk about that skilled guy who's just going to score goals for you. But this guy does that at both ends of the ice. For me, he's an absolute guarantee to play in the National Hockey League for 10, 15 years, barring any major injury.
Dennis Gurianov goes to Dallas. So wonderful player. I think it was you that brought up the points about how he complements a certain player on the Dallas Stars that already exists.
Yeah, Nichushkin, and I think there is a good connection there. I mean, Jim Nill, Joe McDonnell, they've had a great relationship going back to their days with the Detroit Red Wings together. That relationship has continued to move forward here with the Dallas Stars. And it's not a reach there in terms of his skill. Where it was a reach is because he's a Russian player, and you wonder if you're going to be able to get him over here. But that doesn't seem to be a concern. Maybe Nichushkin plays a part of that,
maybe,
and the two get to be able to play, because he's probably a guy who could step right in and play for you next year.
Yeah, and you know, a couple of people have mentioned, you know, this is, you know, the problem with drafting Russian players, you know, the bias against them isn't so much in a lot of ways, you know, that they won't come. It's more so when they get out of their entry-level deal, they already have leverage with the KHL.
Yeah.
And how many say, well, maybe we'll just go back to the KHL.
Yeah, I mean, and that potential exists too. But I think you have to create an environment for the player where the draw of more money, is it going to be significantly more money? You have to, obviously, the money is always going to play a factor in it. But you have to create an environment within the team that if you're winning and things are going pretty
totally,
good,
yeah,
maybe you want to stick around. Maybe you want to be that Verstegu ends up always going back to Chicago to win another cup.
Jakub Zboril, St. John defenseman from the defense factory that is now the Sea Dogs.
Yeah.
He goes first of three picks to the Boston Bruins. We'll get to DeBrusk and Sinishin here in a couple of seconds. But Jake Zboril, the interesting thing about the St. John squad, and I was talking to their general manager Dale Young a couple of days ago, he said, you know what, the numbers for a lot of our players, our defensemen specifically, are low. Next year they should be higher because we spent so much time killing penalties.
Yeah.
So we led the QMJHL in penalties 1300 minutes.
Yeah.
He said don't put much in the point production. It will improve next year because it's our goal to get about 750 minutes in penalties. And that's down from 1300. So I said it was an interesting point.
Yeah.
Because you may look at his numbers and Thomas Chabot's numbers and say, well, rather, you know, pedestrian, but when he said, you know, we spend so much energy in our own zone, and that was one of our problems this year. But nonetheless, Jakub Zboril, first of all, his father was a 220-pound basketball player in Czech Republic, and is a nice little defenseman, too, who does have a little bit of bite to his game.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, he was challenged early on upon coming to the QMJHL. He answered those challenges.
Bradley Kennedy.
A workout machine. They got Paul Boutelier, who's been hired on their staff full-time. But you know what you can't overlook, Jeff? And, you know, you hear things, this, that, the other thing. They made a coaching change moving from Ross Yates. I think there were some internal issues there that in the second half started to come to the fore. You know, Ogier was hurt. That didn't help things very much at all. And then going into the playoffs, to me, a rather disappointing playoff team. They were, you know,
first half, they were top 10 team, Sammy.
Yeah, and I thought they were going to be a contender to win a league title. Well, You saw him play in the second half and into the playoffs. Things didn't work out well there. I think there were some internal issues that got cleaned up with the hiring of Danny Flynn. And watch what he and Paul Baudelaire do with this hockey club. You want to talk about a team that we're going to have to show on Friday Night Hockey?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be the St. John Sea Dogs all day, every day next year.
It's going to be fantastic. And that back end is full value. I mean, with the best blue line in the entire CHL. Yeah. It's remarkable. And we're going to get to the second defenseman from St. John draft in a couple of seconds. But first, Dad liked to chuck him, and Jake likes to tuck him. Jake DeBrusque, son of Louis, goes to the Boston Bruins at 14, which many have already said, maybe a little bit high.
A little aggressive, but when you have three first picks and they're consecutive picks, I think you can afford to just go out and get the guy you want. And good on Don Sweeney. They identified a player. Yep. They went out and got what they want. What I thought was fascinating for me was the chemistry between he and Keith Gretzky. You know, Keith Gretzky was a Pete Chiarelli hire. He replaced Wayne Smith there as the director of scouting, amateur scouting for the Boston Bruins. Then Chiarelli leaves. Don Sweeney takes over. Mind you, it's only a few weeks back, but still, when you're driving the bus, you want to be able to make your own picks. Obviously, at that time, the list had already been made for the Boston Bruins. He put a lot of stock in all the work that that Gretzky did in creating that list, and it looks to me like they stuck to that list with those three consecutive picks.
Zach Sinishin. He's an interesting player. He has speed to burn. He does a lot. Well, pretty much everything that he does is off the rush, but then you could say, well, Sault Ste. Marie's a rush team to begin with. He has this long, lean, almost like sprinter's-like body. You know, I was talking to Kyle Raftus, a general manager, about him a couple of weeks ago, and he said he may be the best athletes that we have on the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. Your thoughts on Zach Sinishin going 15th overall? Yeah, there weren't many people that even had him in the first round.
And give Don Sweeney credit again. They identified a player that they want. They have three second-round picks, at least to this point. At 37, they didn't think he was going to be available. They jumped up and took their guy. Good on him. But here's a guy that, you know, didn't get all the big minutes in Sault Ste. Marie because of the depth of their hockey club. You know, he wasn't the big power play guy. I think he had maybe 5 or 6 power play points of his 42 or 46 points, whatever it is that he had. And now getting to play in a situation where next year he's going to be more of a go-to guy. But you look at the style of game that Sheldon Keefe implemented in Sault Ste. Marie. Run and gun, always have the puck, possession, don't give it up at any cost, make sure you keep control of it, look for the pass, you know, keep possession of the puck. And Zach Sinishin is a guy who can do that extremely well. He fits into the NHL the way the game's being played right now.
Matthew Barzal falls to 16. Some had him as a top 10 guy.
Yeah, where did you have him?
I had Barzal going to the San Jose Sharks at 9.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like Logan Couture-Lite is kind of how I saw him.
Do you think that if he didn't suffer the injury in November there, things would have been different for him?
He missed a big chunk of time. Yeah. The thing about it was he came back, and it was like his first 5 games he didn't have any points, and after that, he was right back at top 4 and was, you know, him and Mitchell Stevens, Canada's best players of the U18 afterwards.
Yeah, he was really good there. I know I talked to Louis Robitaille, assistant coach in that team, and you know, they really praised his work in the half wall and the power play. So I think the one thing that they need to get him to do more is shoot the puck more. I mean, you're looking at a Seattle team that's got a group of 4 97-born players that are all really good. The other 3 of them will end up going in the draft tomorrow. But he's the guy you want with the puck on his stick, and you want him to shoot the puck more. You want him to be that goal-scoring guy. Yes, it's nice, the pretty play, the pass first, that sort of thing, unselfish, all that. This is a guy, though, who has the ability to score goals, and they're going to need to get more out of that from him next year in Seattle.
You know, Winnipeg just wants to get faster and faster. They have Nick Ehlers on the horizon, and then what they do with their first of 2 picks in the first round tonight, they grab Kyle Connor.
Well, another fascinating situation, because you'd have to think with their 2 picks and Colin White, who's the other one that they took Winnipeg there, Roslovic.
They're
probably
Roslovic.
2 guys that are going to end up going the college route, and it does make sense if that's the case, because you delay having to get them in your system for a little bit. Yeah. When you're looking at a hockey club that's really deep with their talent pool right now, goaltenders, they got Hellebuck and Comrie there. Yep. Back end, they got Kostelec and Morrissey. Up front, Dilio, Patan. There's a bevy of guys that they have up front as well. So maybe these 2 guys fit into those plans in terms of staggering the contracts and when they come up, RFA, all that sort of thing. I think both of those guys fit in that mold.
Let's get to the St. John defenseman. Ottawa Senators grabbed Thomas Chabot. And beginning of this year, Chabot went to Darryl Young and said, I want to be a first rounder. I want to get in the first round of the draft. And Daryl pointed at Jakub Sporl and said, that's the guy you're chasing. That's the guy you have to chase all. And they created like this internal competition between the two of them. If one was working out 5 days a week, the other's working out 5 days a week. If the other one added a sixth day to the week, the other one added a sixth day. Fitness classes, they both took it. Boxing lessons, yeah. That's another one. The one takes boxing, other one's got to do boxing. It forces internal competition where all season long, Thomas Chabot was chasing Jakub Sporl on doing whatever he did.
A lot of the guys I talked to worried a little bit about his hockey sense, but there are a couple of things that you really have to love about the guy. His size, his skating ability, his work ethic. Those three things. And, you know, looking at Ottawa, they always seem to pick in that, like, 16 range, yep. You know, kind of in the middle of the pack. And they seem to do a really good job there. I mean, I give Pierre Dorion a lot of credit. Randy Lee stepped up in an assistant general manager's role. He's really good at identifying talent and helping develop that talent. That's more of his specialty. And Brian Murray, it really gives both of those guys a lot of responsibility to go out and do what they do best. But Dorion's always had a good track record with his scouting, going back to his days with Montreal and getting Chabot, puck-moving defenseman, excellent skater, hard work ethic. Got to love it.
Something really happened at 19. The Detroit Red Wings took Evgeny Svechnikov over Joel Eriksson Ek. If there was one player in that area of the draft that I said is a really Detroit-type player, it would be the Swedish center. But instead, they took the winger from Cape Breton, who at times in the playoffs we saw played center. Thank you very much. And at times for the Screaming Eagles, was kind of a one-man band on some nights.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting club because I think at the start of the year, everyone projected them to be a real high-flying club. And they almost turned that into a seven-game series win over the Quebec Remparts in round one and took them right to the brink there. The Remparts ended up winning that series, took a lot out of the Remparts, and ultimately cost them down the road in the MasterCard Memorial Cup. But getting back to Svechnikov, I think that maybe Detroit felt there was just a little bit more upside in him than Joel Eriksson Ek, because Ek was a guy who was on that steady rise all year, where Svechnikov, I think, was a little more consistent, even though he missed some time with the ankle sprain there in November.
Joel Eriksson Ek, great second half, a great U18. He gets picked up by the Minnesota Wild. Your thoughts?
Minnesota? You want to talk about another team doing a sprint to the podium? They were really, really excited to get him there at 20. They didn't think there was a chance, especially with Ottawa and Detroit, both teams that have had success drafting Swedes. They didn't think he was going to be available there for him. When he was, they're loving what they came out of this first round with.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Then Colin White goes, who's sort of a poor man's Patrice Bergeron, shall we say, maybe the best face-off man in the entire draft this year.
Great face-off guy. Big goal guy.
Yeah.
You know, ask the Hockey Canada guys about the under-18s when he scored a hat trick against them, when he scored the game winner in overtime against Finland to win them the gold medal. A lot to like about his game. The thing is, you had to do your due diligence on him because as an underager, you loved him. But this year, dealing with the mono, the wrist injuries, you had to wonder whether or not he was going to be a guy that was going to live up to that billing. If you watch him the last 2 months, he might have overstepped his boundaries there, and I think that's a real good pick there at 21.
You know, there's been a vibe the last few years where you don't take goaltenders in the first round. That is a domain of the second round, and the second round alone, and we saw this last year in Philadelphia. But Ilya Samsonov goes to the Washington Capitals, who is probably one of the only teams that could look at Ilya Samsonov and say, you know what, he's got a 3-year contract in the KHL, and we're okay about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, it's always the Ovi thing when you look at Washington and drafting Russians, but another team that's not afraid to go that route whatsoever. I mean, that 3-year, listen, if you have multiple picks, I don't have a problem with taking a goalie in the first round, but oftentimes you just don't see that guy come to fruition as a general manager, and maybe Brian McClellan here in his first year knows he's got at least 3 years to deal with, and so he decided to take a run at him. But if you look at the trajectory of Braden Holtby and where he is, maybe in 3 years' time when he becomes that max money guy for Washington, that's where he steps in a la Bishop Vasilevsky, and maybe Samsonov's able to come over and play in a backup role for a year and then start to move forward with his career in the NHL.
You know, the USHL is not the easiest league to score goals in, but Brock Besser does it very well. Thank you very much. He goes to the Vancouver Canucks, who surprised many, yours truly included. When you look at the recent history of what the Vancouver Canucks have done in the first round, It's all forwards.
Yeah.
And you look what's happening with the Vancouver Canucks right now, and that back end needs some reinforcements. They need some help ASAP. They don't address it this round of this draft. Instead, they go and grab the high-scoring right winger out of the USHL.
Maybe they thought it was a bit of a stretch for Noel Juulsen, or maybe one of the Swedish defensemen that were still available at that time. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that was a little bit off the charts for me. And when you look at Vancouver and all the noise Jim Benning made last year, he just kind of sat back.
Yep.
He worked the phones a little bit, and that's what they came up with Besser. But he's a very motivated young man for what's happened to him personally in his life.
Yeah, it's a tragic story. Travis Konecny goes to the Philadelphia Flyers.
Slip sliding away. It's tough to see that because the concerns are the size and the head issues.
Yep.
And the style of game that he has to play in order to be successful. Will it translate into the National Hockey League where he can be that pest, where he can run a guy? That's the question everyone has, and I think that's why he slipped to where he did. You're getting a whole lot of leadership, the intangibles.
Yeah.
I know Jeff Brown absolutely loves this guy. Figured he should have been in the top 10. Poor start to the season, really good from the prospects on out.
Really, eh? It almost seemed as if after the prospects came, when he played with Timo Meier and Connor McDavid,
yeah,
everything was different about him. And almost as if, you know, when he had the C put on the sweater earlier on this season by Jeff Brown, he carried that like an albatross.
Yeah.
That was an anchor around his neck.
Position change, too, you know,
as
going
well
from center to the wing.
Yeah.
That's a tough one for a young guy to handle, especially, you know, you're the captain, you're the center, you want to be that guy. And Jeff Brown had to temper that back a little bit, but he was hard on himself.
Didn't go over well with a lot of the veterans on that team.
No, but, you know, in the long run, is that where he's going to end up playing?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I was surprised at Winnipeg. Now, you had Roslovic married to the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah. Yep.
And were you surprised Winnipeg jumped up? It's only one pick away.
Yeah. I thought he'd go there. Like, I knew Montreal, you know, had a thing for him. I thought they really liked him and would have taken him there. But everyone you talked about Roslovic, they're talking about, okay, we put him on a line with Tkachuk and Matthews, and he actually made the line better with two really good players.
All right. Eh?
Yeah, and that was the sense that I got. And because of that, and how much Don Granato had to fight and battle to find a guy to finally fill that spot, and the one thing he said is, someone's going to get Roslovic, and they're going to be ecstatic. He's really coachable. He's got a bit of a funny side to him every now and then. But when he's the guy who gets thrown in the middle between those other players and makes them better, that says a lot about him to me.
You know, Noah Juulsen plays with the Everett Silvertips, which is a team coached by Kevin Constantine. And therefore, it will be and is a defense-first squad. Probably the best scenario for Noah Juulsen to be in. What do you make of Montreal jumping up and grabbing the Silvertips, D-man?
Yeah, a lot of people had him in the first round. I wasn't one of those. I thought he was going to be in the top five picks in round number two. But he's got great compete to his game, you know, coming from a good program, like you said, has a really good shot, a tricky shot that's got, as Constantine calls it, a lot of staying power to it. where goaltenders either they can't see it off a stick or it's a little harder than they expect, and a lot of unforeseen rebounds end up off of his shot. So he'll be able to help you out in the power play, you know, down the road a little bit, and maybe a little less risk-taking than a Nathan Beaulieu or a P.K. Subban.
The next pick was someone that Minnie had married to the Toronto Maple Leafs for their second pick of the first round before they traded it. And that's Jacob Larsson, the big defenseman from Sweden, 6'2", 190 pounds.
The tweener between Shillington and Carlson. You know, he's a little bit of a offense, a little bit of defense, and a little bit of size. So he's kind of the tweener guy there, and probably the best of those three prospects. Yeah, really good pick there for Anaheim, and they had pretty good success with Lindholm, so maybe this guy follows in the footsteps of Lindholm.
You know, if you like goals, sometimes you ignore the size, and the Islanders did that, who at the beginning of the night had zero picks in the first round. By the end of it, they had two. Anthony Beauvillier from Shawinigan goes to the Islanders.
Well, I give Garth Snow credit. I mean, he comes firing. He's ultimately confident in his scouts. He's ultimately confident in the decisions he makes.
Yep.
He goes up and says, hey, I want Josh Hosang last year. He finds a trading partner in Tampa, almost the same spot. Tampa had 35 last year, or rather, New York had 35. They moved up to 28 to Tampa. This year it was 33 and whatever, 71, 72. They move up, same trading partner. They identify a guy that they want in Beauvillier there. I had him outside of the first round. He was one of those guys that was probably between 25 and 35, but New York identifies him. And you know the thing, Jeff? The New York Islanders, they think they're ahead of the curve with their scouting.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of kind of secrecy and that sort of thing going on there. No one's talking about it, but they feel that they have one little edge somewhere, somehow, that helps them identify as amateur players better than everybody else. Mm-hmm. They've identified Beauvillier. It's a wait and see.
You know what? If you want scoring, he's one of your guys. If you can look the other way on the size, this guy just flat out fills the net. You mentioned Carlson. Let's talk about him. He goes to the Columbus Blue Jackets with their second pick in the first round, and he is the classic stay-at-home guy. But I believe you mentioned on the show tonight, there's some people that think he does have more offense to give.
Yeah, they do. And Mike Johnson, working with him, was great because he played in Sweden, so he knows how the system works over there. And it just takes guys seemingly a little longer, but they've got good practice habits over there. They've got more time to practice because of the schedule. And this is a guy that they feel will just grow into his body. He'll end up playing at about 220 probably. 215, and be a guy because of his skating that they think is going to have that offensive upside. And if that's the case there, wow, that's a really good pick for Columbus.
That's a nice one. And then rounding out the first round, must have been some nervous times for Nick Merkley. One of our favorite wingers from the Kelowna Rockets. He goes 30th to Arizona. Nice pick.
Just saw him in the hallway there, and he said, I sneaked in there. I said, well, you deserve it, you know. With his consistency, I don't see why someone wouldn't have taken him early. Yes, there's the skating. Yes, there's the size. But consistency, the adversity of having to accept Leon Draisaitl onto his team, take away some of his power play minutes, some of his 5-on-5 time, and now Merkley adjusts to that, and he ends up playing remarkably. I thought he was great at the Cup.
Oh, he was fantastic. And engaged physically, too, against bigger kids.
So there's a lot to like about his game. I think that's a really good pick there for Arizona at 30, but I'm surprised they went back to the well with another forward.
Yep, they did. They need some help on the back end ASAP after Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Some names that we didn't see in the first round, whether it's Daniel Sprong, whether it's Jansen Harkins, there's a few more. Oliver Shillington, some people thought would be in there in the first round. What do you expect tomorrow? Starts off at 10 o'clock Eastern, Sammy.
Oh, yeah. To be honest with you, Jeff, more activity. More trade activity. You look at all the teams with multiple picks in the second round. The Toronto Maple Leafs now have slipped back into the mold. So I haven't done all the calculations. It's got to be 7-8 teams with multiple second-round picks. Those picks are still really coveted because, as you say, there's guys that slipped out of the first round that teams are going to have high on their list in that 25 range. Hey, I can still go and get that guy, maybe at 35, maybe at 40. And so I think you're going to see more trade activity.
Second round should be fascinating. Sam mentions plenty of good players still available on Saturday morning. It all begins early, 10 o'clock Eastern, for rounds 2 through 7 of the 2015 NHL draft. Any more thoughts, Sam? We're going to wrap this one up.
No, I'm tired, man.
All right, Sammy's had it, and I'm had it.
Beat too.
It's midnight. We're fried after doing a great show tonight. So thanks so much for joining us here on this podcast, and thanks so much to everyone who watched us on Sportsnet as we kicked off the first of, well, I guess we got 11 more now, the 12-year relationship between Rogers Sportsnet and the NHL. Thanks for joining us on Junior. Not sure when we're going to return. Probably not until the fall. That's right. I guess it's kind of our last show for a while now, Sammy. All right, so well done, Sam. It's been a pleasure. Looking forward to next season with more CHL action and more CHL podcast love right here on Junior. Thanks for joining us this year.